I am so honored to bring you Dr. Day Bryant, psychologist and professor at IUSB, and her social action project. A few weeks ago, I had attended the Ubuntu Spirit event, not realizing just the depth and the breadth of how this was going to come together. And through the last interview, I got a glimpse of the SOCHAT initiative and really wanted to do a deep dive, which is what we're doing here. And so without further ado, here we go.
Hello, everybody. This is Jamila Blue, founder and executive director of Conscious Michiana. And today I am so excited to be able to bring to you Dr. Day Bryant, who is going to talk to us about her SOCHAT program and how it came to be and what that means to us and our community here in Michiana. I am just so thrilled with just the things that I've seen as a result of it over the years. And I'm just really excited to be able to bring to you Dr. Day to be able to tell us about this. Well, hello, Dr. Day.
Hello, Jamila. It's always such a pleasure. Yes. And I appreciate that you said over the years, because it has been years that we've been working on the Social Action Project. So I am happy to talk about it.
Perfect. I am so excited. So let's just start from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. How did the Social Action Project, what caused you to decide, I want to put this together? What was going on in your life? What caused that decision to be made? What was happening and how did it come to be?
The Social Action Project is actually the end product of my dissertation work, of my undergraduate experience. As I was training as a clinical psychologist, it became clear to me that the people that I felt would need our services as professionals the most are not the people I was being trained to provide services to. The theories and the practices and the whole worldview was really geared toward people who could pay $100 plus an hour for 50 minutes to have those services provided. And even with the advent of the sliding scale, which is actually pretty new in terms of how psychology does its work, it came in with the changes that were occurring across the nation during the 60s. And even with a sliding scale, there are people who, even if they could come up with the funds, they wouldn't go into a place that said mental health services on the billboard or on the plaque outside. So the stigma, in addition to the cost, made it clear to me that I needed a different set of skills. And I found community psychology, which is a nexus of clinical psychology, sociology, and political science. So my job is to ask what is going on with the person, what's going wrong for them, but also to ask what's happening in their larger environment and what could we do to address those things, not only in this moment when a person is in crisis or is in the midst of their struggle to come to some equilibrium, but also to look at what is it that we might be able to do prevention-wise so that the next people don't have to deal with these types of problems. One of my favorite quotes from Desmond Tutu has to do with people who are drowning in the river. He says, it's wonderful to help people who are drowning in the river, but it's smarter to go upstream and find out why they're jumping in the river in the first place. So SOCHAT is really built on the philosophy that we need to be able to deliver services of the kind that people need, but we also need to look at what systemic things are happening around them and ask what can we do to address those as well. And so SOCHAT was the manifestation of that way of thinking about how to deliver psychology. and started when I got here to IUSB back in 1990, and has grown since then to be as intentional and deliberate as it is now.
Oh my, I knew that it had been a work in progress for some time. However, I had no idea that it went back so far.
Yes, it goes back quite a ways.
That's wonderful.
It's been a productive ride, as well as being one that's has created lots of opportunities for growth, not only for myself, but also for the network that we've been able to build, for the people that we've worked with over the years. And the approach is, I go out and I go to things, and the students or community members who are working with me go to places, and we sit and we listen and we try and understand what it is people feel the need for. And then we can sit down and talk about, so what could we do? We arrive at the table with a tool chest of things that are available to be done. And then through that collaboration, we can come to what should we do. And so the activities or the interventions that we're involved with change over time. Our objective is to work our way out of the picture, whatever that might be. And so when we reach the point where it's time for us to hand off, then that's what we do when we move on.
So help me understand, help us understand, over the years, what have been some of the projects that have taken place over the years? Any of them that you would like to highlight that have been, you know, the most meaningful for you as well as the community?
Over the years, all of our work has dealt with how do we use the arts as a way of dealing with social change, as a vehicle for people to think about it, as a product that they can generate and take to lobbies or paint on walls or have as an affirmation that they can put on their refrigerator. And using the arts as a way of looking at what is it that you need has been the most effective for us, as well as the simplest tool to use to deal with very complex, challenging issues. And so over the years, we've dealt with relationships and family, especially with youth programming. For a number of years, we did youth programming, including an arts camp that we did at one of the local retreat centers. Well, not that local, it's about 40, Geneva Center is about 45 minutes from here. And we would work through the summer with groups of kids, and then in August, we would go to this camp. And all of the initiatives were about identity and family and how do you deal with dynamics in school and in your neighborhood. And then it would all come together at the camp with a big play that the youths would write and put on with help from adults in their lives, from other youth serving organizations. It was an opportunity for everybody to be together and to get the kids out of the city, which was, there are stories to tell about urban kids in it's not even rural out at Geneva Center. It's not really rustic. There's doors and pipes and it's a retreat center. But for these kids who have not spent time in an environment without streetlights, so it's not possible to just, well, it is possible to just walk out the cabin door and go for a walk, but there are no lights. And so that's a whole different environment, and helping them navigate that was a learning experience for us all. But we also had an opportunity to work with some amazing youths, some of whom I run into now at grocery stores, and they have families of their own, and they still remember that art camp. So that was a number of years we did that initiative. We've also worked in Benton Harbor. We worked with neighborhoods in Benton Harbor to address basic issues within neighborhoods, trash collection, landlords, policy statements or actions from the city government, the really basic types of grassroots organizing that way. And using the arts in each of those and doing it in a way that allows people to express themselves, but also discover some new talents and interests. So it is, over the years, we just advanced forward as we worked with teens and with young adults, with crisis intervention. We are and moving toward the work that we're doing now, which is looking at trauma and how do we overcome trauma. Each of those steps before then made it clearer and clearer to me as the director that we needed to drop back a few paces and ask what basically trauma is and how do we keep it from being this monster thing that people feel they must take on as one giant issue, when in fact trauma can be divided up into its smaller components and people can make decisions about where they want to enter into dealing with their own trauma as well as traumas in their neighborhoods and communities.
Wow, that's really, really powerful to be able to address such a large issue and something that we all experience. We've all had trauma. I mean, being birthed is a traumatic experience. And then there's the extreme parts of trauma and how it holds us back. And I know for myself in my own healing journey, I recognize just what a huge impact it is to be able to just go to those very dark places and really address trauma as it's held in my body, to be able to find that release and what it feels like to be on the other side of that.
Right.
And it's just such an amazing gift to be able to offer oneself and to be able to offer the community so that we can heal collectively and come together and show up more for ourselves and our community. As we are more online ourselves, we're able to show up more authentically to those around us. Exactly. In our immediate environment, as well as outside of that in our workplace and how we socialize and all of those things. So I really recognize just the importance of that. Now, out of curiosity, as you've been explaining this, one of the things I know that you talked about it initially in a very broad way of how you identify these. And I just want to hone in on that a little bit more. So is it through the students that come through the school that you're able to see how that's being impacted? Is it other people that's part of the SOCHAT organization that come together and you meet and you're able to identify based on where you're located? How can you kind of walk me through your process a little bit more of just how those things are identified, where you know that this is, how are you wanting to move forward to take action on it?
Actually, our process is the other way around. We start off, usually myself, since I'm the one who has the flexibility to go to events and show up at lectures and sit in coffee shops and hold conversations with people. And that's where it begins, myself and maybe one or two of the other people that I'm working with. And we sit and we talk and people come over and we sit and we talk. And this phase can take sometimes several weeks or several months because people have to decide. They have to decide, who are you and why are you here? And we have to work to hear them talk, to see what they're about and what it is their needs are and what are their interests and skills. And after that period of getting to know one another, then we can start talking about, so what is it that they need doing? We had this tool chest of things we could do. And through the process of while we're talking, it sounds to me as if this and this and that thing right there are things that you would like to be able to take a look at. Do I have that right? And if they say, well, yes, or even if they say, no, you haven't been listening to me, this and this and this is what I need, then we can decide, so what can we do? And the arts is our basic skill set. And I reach out to other people that I might need if more specific types of things, interventions are needed. So I have a roster of consultants that I can turn to, or business owners or whoever might be needed to be able to meet some of those other things that we don't do. But the shape of the intervention is definitely driven by the folks that we're working with and have been talking with and building relationships with. The piece that we're doing with Homegrown Hype evolved over a year or so as I was working with my own, with Ubuntu, and I was going to Homegrown Hype events and sitting and talking with Myron and Nia. And through those conversations, it became clear that there was a good collaboration we could do because there were complementary things that we each brought to the table.
Love that. So since you began speaking about Ubuntu, let's just talk more about that. Was Ubuntu an idea or something that was already in process prior to those discussions with Nia and Marvin, or was it something that happened as a result of?
The initiative itself had been underway. We are at this moment in its fourth cycle. It was conceived through the same process that we've been talking about. And I tested it, did a beta test to be sure about logistics and building a roster of artists and figuring out just what it would take to make it happen and do it well. And I then was able to talk with Nia and Myron about what it is we do, what is it that you feel you need in terms of working with artists. The idea of the performance workshop is one that Nia has had in her mind for some time, and it came up pretty early in our conversations together as something she would like to do and felt a need for, then being very deeply rooted in the artist community. That was it was a natural fit. The next steps were, so how do we figure out how to do this collaboration? I'd been doing it online because we started during COVID. And so what adjustments needed to be made for how I present content and what was it that she intended to do for her content? And between several conversations, we were able to figure out how I needed to adapt what I've been doing as she was developing what she would like to do. And you've seen the outcome.
So Ubuntu spirit, storytelling to heal through trauma. Is that the correct name? And has that been the name all along? Or do you change it from Ubuntu spirit with each cycle, it'll have like an extra whatever that fits after that? Like, do you know what I'm asking?
Mm-hmm. The tagline does evolve with each iteration, because we have people who've been with us for each of the cycles, and our conversations are being more and more shaped by that. It is influenced by what's going on in the news. It is influenced by what types of information it sounds as if still are needed. But the basic name of the initiative, the Ubuntu Project, that's the umbrella. And so as we deal with what does trauma look like and what does it mean, what does it actually mean to overcome trauma? And that falls off the tongue really easily, but what does it entail? So the content of each of the episodes is shaped by that question in relation to the topics.
The word Ubuntu, what does that mean?
That is it means I am because we are, to communicate the message that I need to heal and work on myself, but I also exist within a community. And that community also hurts if I'm hurting and becomes stronger when I become strong. So it's holding in the mind that notion that none of us exists all by ourselves. We may have our own circles. We may in some ways be an introvert and don't feel as if I have a circle at all. But the truth of the matter is we're all connected to someone or some group of people or some circle of people. And so we cannot leave them out of our thinking in terms of what does overcoming trauma mean? How do we connect? When are the times we need to step away or step outside and take care of some things. And then how do we then return to our circles? And what is it we can do when we do that so that we have the dynamics? It is always a dynamic when you're talking about social situations or systemic change or any of those things that are inherent to those really big issues that people are dealing with, that as a source of the trauma, they're trying to work their way through.
The initial Ubuntu Spirit project this last couple of weeks at Lang Lab, if I remember right, do I remember you saying something about a sister collaboration? I'm not quite sure the connection between the here and Africa.
Yes. Part of our work we have always done in some other country, because I believe as the professional in charge, that it's important for us to ask how well our theories and practices work anywhere else in the world. And we risk being irrelevant if we are not aware of how ethnocentric it's so easy to become, and how much we need to take into account different cultures. I mean, that sounds so simplistic, but when you look at our literature and you look at our curricula and even licensing, things like that assume a certain cultural context, and it's simply not true. And so we work in other parts of the world as well. We are currently in South Africa, working in South Africa. We have not been able to go there since COVID, not only because during COVID, everything shut down. But now that we are in a different phase in dealing with the virus, there's still aftershocks of what happened with the shutdown initially. And fortunately, we have Zoom, we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have ways of keeping in touch. That it will be nice when we can go back. Our work is in Durban in South Africa. And the people who created and designed the big sculpture that we use as the prompt during the Ubuntu sessions are mainly who we work with when we're there. And then through their networks and our networks, we do a variety of collaborations. But always, just as I do when I'm here in this country, I go, I sit, I talk, and I see what is it that needs doing, and what among all of the things we might do, could we do while we're there? So Robin Opperman and his crew are artists and craftspeople who are developing amazing new things. If you have an opportunity, definitely visit their Facebook page. They work from recycled materials, and they create outstanding art based on an image that they just pull out of thin air, as far as I can see. I said, I need participatory public art. That's all I said. And everything else they came up with themselves. They came up with a humanoid figure. They came up with the notion of a shaman who is at the center of communication within neighborhoods, with individuals, as a Zulu culture. Zulu culture is a collective culture. And so the idea that we're all in this together, even as we are each developing our own abilities and our own strengths and figuring out how I get through this Tuesday afternoon, but also asking questions about, so where's the whole community going? Where are the people going? Where are we going as a people? And how do we do that in a way that brings along as many of us as possible? So they are a natural link for us. We've been working with Robin and his crew since the late 90s and have had a number of successful initiatives back and forth, and this one with Lightbringer being the most recent one.
I'll be sure to put pictures in. I know that there's some pictures up online with it now, and I'll make sure that I continue to include pictures, because it was really well done and incredibly beautiful piece of work.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. Just so.
All and recycled. That's what
I love that part.
I really appreciate how they went from these piles of bottle tops and consumer packaging and old telephone wire and cast off beads. And they're just, I've been to their workshop many times over the years. And they really literally are just piles of stuff sitting around the workshop because recycling is not as big a thing there. And so folks are happy to have them cart that stuff away. And they do, but, and I'm sure there's an order to the chaos, but as the person who's just walking in, but from all of that, they created Lightbringer. They sent me some sketches and I said, yeah, this looks interesting, but I had no idea just how astounding the piece really would turn out to be based on nothing more than those few words of instruction for me.
I also love how with each of the Ubuntu sessions that you'll have with Naya's performance therapy, where we're able to be able to work on a piece of art that's going to go on to that piece of sculpture. I just love that collaboration.
Yeah. I'm excited about the company in peace. I'm going to, on my to-do list is to commission an artist who can put all of that together into something. And I can't envision what it might be, other than that it should obviously go with the sculpture. But I'm happy to leave that to the artists. That's what they do. I've been letting people play to their skills.
Absolutely. So let's just go back just a little bit. So you talked about how the Ubuntu project, this is in its fourth iteration. Can you talk about the prior ones and just kind of what those were like, or what those were focused on, or a little bit of just talking about them a little bit from each of the cycles?
In each of the cycles, it becomes clear to me as the developer and the organizer how logistically make it happen, given changes in the virus, the status of the virus, given changes in the venues that we have available for us to be able to do the sessions themselves. But it's also shaped, each of the iterations are also shaped by what it is people are talking about and what it is that they that seems to resonate with them. And I would say that in our very first beta run was almost a 10,000 foot overview, and talking about what trauma is, and in each of these areas we've identified how we might think about it, what kind of language we might use. And then as we move forward into this most current iteration, it's become, I've been able to shape it so it is more grounded and addresses individuals in more precise language rather than a larger conceptual language. And I think that's an important progression. Even those folks who have stayed with us with each of the iterations, it's drawing them further and further in and allowing them to look more and more deeply into how they are experiencing these episodes.
So the iteration before this one, the last cycle, what was its focus? I know the focus was on trauma. However, what did that look and feel like in each of the sessions that you conducted?
Well, each of the sessions included the same type of content, but delivered in a way that sparked a discussion that was not as, it was personal, but not as intimate, perhaps, is the word I'm looking for. And I was still working with how to take what is essentially a group of strangers who walked into a room and to create a space where people would feel safe enough to ask those more deeply buried questions. And that, how to do that with the space, with the way the content is delivered, with the people who are sitting around a table, and how do I get a sense for what their personalities are, their their questions might be, all of those things. So the biggest difference between the last iteration and this one is my facility at being a more effective facilitator.
So with last time in the last cycle, were there also six sessions? There's going to be six sessions of this next one, right? In total?
There are five episodes where we are doing the exchange. And then in the sixth session, we bring together all the feathers and all the work and as many of the artists as might be available so that we have a kind of a closure and transition into the next session, the next iteration. So the five sessions go from September until January. And then in February, we do the last, hopefully, unveiling of the new companion piece for the Lightbringer.
And in the prior year, I'm having such a hard time saying that word, iteration. In the prior iterations,
yes,
there were also like five sessions. Is that, yes, kind of what the structure has been for each, yes, of them?
That's,
okay.
That's the basic structure. What's inside, but the content is changes in terms of what I learned from the previous iteration and what's going on in the world. I try really hard to anchor all of the sessions in the here and now. We talk about things that have gone on before in terms of current history and the larger society and what's in the news and all of those things, so that people can find a way to ground them, find their space inside that content in this present historical moment. Rather than my having a script that I read and then I try and help people resonate with that script, I don't think of that as an effective way to run the sessions.
Mm-hmm. So I know in our last week, we did a podcast interview talking about the first session and what that looked and felt like and how you and Nia came together and how, you know, what brought this together to be a program this round. However, for those who have not heard that yet, hopefully they'll be able to go back and give it a listen. Okay. However, for those who have not, can you just give a brief description of what happened on that first meetup, that first Ubuntu Spirit Project 2 weeks ago?
Each of the iterations starts off with the basic question about what is normal. It is a question I get, even as I'm, I don't know, going through the checkout aisle in the local box store, you know, start chit-chatting with people, who are you, what do you do? And I say, I'm a psychologist, and then there's a story. And people want to know after that story, is that normal? And I give them the same answer that essentially we talked through in our first session. The reality is that normal is a concept that doesn't apply in very significant ways. Normal, that's why it was called normal, is a setting on the dryer, because what is normal changes depending upon what group you're talking to, sometimes what day of the week you're talking to that group. It changes in terms of historical context. It was totally abnormal for someone who looks like me to hold a PhD and to be involved in university work and have hold positions, because there was a time when it was abnormal for women to be outside the home and for Black folks to have any kind of power. And that has changed. And it will continue to change. Those types of things, gender roles and expectations based on economics and belief tradition, everything changes. And so the better question is, how is what this individual is thinking, saying, feeling in this moment serving their growth? And is that something that they want to continue to do rather than what is normal? Mm-hmm. So building from that, we will begin to look at other issues related to trauma. Having the session that's coming up looks at personal power as compared to systemic power. And what does that mean? We've been throwing around those terms like crazy over the last couple of years, ever since the first work of the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement, the idea that there are systems of power that are in place and have been in place, and that they privilege one group over another. And what does that look like? So that we can talk about what's causing the trauma, and where can we enter into the question, and what do we need to know to understand what those systems are and how to navigate them.
And at the last session, there was also an artist featured. Can you talk a little bit more about that part as well?
Cameron came, he agreed. Nia was the person who found Cameron for us. She's going to be helping me build the roster of artists. And Cameron came on as our feature artist. Each session has a 10-15 minute segment where I talk with our feature artist about their art, about how their art has helped them through challenging times, or to deal with trauma, or just to bring them joy. Having joy as something that is a buffer for all of the isms that might be out there, for the days that I'm just absolutely used up at the end of the day, but I still have a to-do list for those days. How does their art, whatever that might be, help them through those days? And he was great. He played us some of his music. We had a chance to hear him talk about how the music does bring him joy and allows him to be able to work through, by developing these pieces, the issues, whatever that might be, he's dealing with that in that moment. And you could hear it as he was talking to us, just how important having those options are for him to be able to go turn to his music, to be able to deal with, or at least build his strength so that he can continue to deal with whatever is happening in his life. And I anticipate having just those kinds of conversations at each of the sessions. We'll have a different artist each time, and that artist will talk with us about where does their art fit in for them, and how does that help them make it through from this thing to the next thing, whether that's a week from now or in the next minute, whatever that is. How does the art work for them? I'm excited about our roster that we have this cycle. I think that we have musicians and we have sculptors and we have different people using different mediums, because I define art very broadly. and so it opens up our opportunity to talk with different people who use different means to be able to accomplish that equilibrium that we are all striving for.
Exactly. And I really, that's one of the things that I really appreciate about what you just said, is with having the artist featured, we in the audience not only get to hear or be a part of or experience with them, with their art, but also to be able to see, like you had talked about, the art in their daily lives and what this is through your discussion points. And what I really appreciate about that is it helps me reflect. I don't consider myself an artist per se, even though I know that we are all art creating our lives. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself a fine artist by any sense of the word with any of those mediums. And so what I think that this allows us for is permission to see how we can explore it in our own lives, in our own way. And what does that mean for us? And taking away the perfection that I believe that we all...
Yes.
Kind of, that thing that keeps us from doing it or pushing it forward or whatever that might be for us. Mm-hmm. So that open exchange between your talking points, that interaction, and bringing it back to us individually, allowing us to just be more of that collectively, is very empowering, I believe.
Yes. And that is the underlying objective of the whole project, is to allow a space where people can find that thing that is important for them, and the fact that they can dig into it and it can become what they need it to be. And we have so few spaces where that is an open space that you can fill in the way that makes sense for where you're at right now, for what your challenges are in the moment, for what resources are available. I just bring in stuff and lay it out on tables. And it is amazing, as you were saying, that we are sometimes so caught up in whether we can do a thing perfectly. We tell ourselves we can't do it at all. And I have had many sessions where people come in and I'll present all the materials, and someone inevitably will say, "Well, oh, no, I'm not really an artist. I really can't do." And 20 minutes later, they're working away on with colors and they're stacking things and opening up. It's like, and I just smile. So I love those moments when people find their stride and they find a way to be able to hang on to that even once our session is over for the night. And I try and keep in touch using a variety of social platforms so that people can continue that growth even when we're not all in a room together.
Yeah, those moments of us just being able to play, bring out our inner child, and just be without our inner critic getting in the way.
Nobody going by saying, "Why are you using that color?" or "What is that actually supposed to be?" None of that happens. And we've gotten some amazing pieces of work because people have just been felt free to do whatever they feel they need to do.
Is there anything else that we've not, that you would like to talk on that we've not brought up yet in this interview?
Only to encourage people to feel free to come for each of the gatherings, each of the meetups. It is designed to have each session stand on its own, if that's all people have time or space for in their lives. But its conception is for each of those episodes to build on one another, so that by the time we get to the sixth episode, when we are celebrating how far we've come and what we have done, then we will have moved collectively as well as individually to some new level. What that looks like will vary depending upon who we're talking about and what's been going on for them, but the opportunity to continue that growth and that forward motion is in attending all of the meetups. And you'll probably meet people that you'll see there each time and can continue those conversations that have gotten started here in our very first episode.
That's wonderful. And just, I wanted to reiterate, you will be leading those once a month, and this is kind of a loose schedule moving forward, I think, between now and February, or is it about once a month?
It is about once a month, yes. Okay. Each month, I can't remember what Wednesday it is. I think it's the second Wednesday of each month, but don't quote me on that. I have them by dates. But in between the sessions that Nea is doing are my monthly sessions, and those I have anchored so that she can do whatever it is she feels she needs to do in between times.
And just for those listening, I will have the dates listed on the podcast page so that people can see. And also, I will include Nea's, she has an intake form for the performance therapy, if that's something that you would like to be a part of. And I do know that she has structured it as such so that for as you lead that topic each month, there are like prompts that'll be based on that topic, you know, through the month, until you come to your next topic, and then it'll each of the sessions that she has weekly, which will be at the Homegrown Hype studio on Wednesdays from 6 until 8. So each week then, I know she's inviting those who would like to be able to
work on just being able to find ways to be able to speak up more, get more comfortable in their skin. You don't have to be a performer to have performance therapy. I am not a performer, but I feel the need to be able to go and practice skills. So I love that it's a space to be able to do that. And it's a very inviting space. And the people that are there, in the first session at least, were very, just a really good group of people that really had some poignant things that they were able to share and focus on, and just keeping it very real. And Nia just held a really tight container while allowing things to be very loose and organic. And it was just really well done. I'm very, very happy with just how that's been structured. And I'm really looking forward to those moving forward, as well as the pieces that you'll have as well, and how these will continue over the next few months. I think that the last session is at the end of February, like all together. So yeah, so I'll have things posted. So I will get links from you, Day, of any links that I don't currently have, so I can get those in there. And once again, there's the prior episode that we talked about this program all together in a very generalized view. And I just was really thankful that you were wanting to talk more about the SOCHAT program and just how it came to be. Because it's just such important work. I just really feel the importance, especially, you know, with this trauma piece, because it's just so broad and huge. And for us to be able to come together as a community and show up for ourselves and each other, it's something that we need to work through.
Yes, we do. And that's, to me, that's it. That's the power of the model. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the link with Nia and and you're right, she's amazing. She is amazing. And I'm very impressed over just a short amount of time, and for the last year or so, maybe a bit more, that I've been talking with them and seeing what they do and seeing the heart that they put into it. And dedicated they are to each of the initiatives they started. Yeah, I have my own set of trading cards so that I can go to the trading card events, and, the Rocky Button and karaoke. Those things sound mundane, but they are powerful ways of getting people, bringing people together and getting people comfortable. All kinds of people. One of the things that I was most impressed about was I attended their trading card party, and everybody was in the room. We had it was intergenerational. It was people from different walks of life, people in suits, as well as people in tennis shoes. And it was different conversations, different languages that people were speaking while they were there. It was amazing. And no one in the room was standing off to the side as if they weren't really sure it was okay for them to be there. Sometimes you see that at events, public events. But they might have been standing off at the side, but they didn't stand there by themselves for long. Somebody came up and said something to them and drew them into a conversation or a group or something. So yes, I'm very pleased that they agreed to collaborate with me on this effort.
Me too. All right. Well, this has been so lovely, Dr. Day. I really appreciate you, the work you're doing, the time to be able to do this tonight on this last day of summer.
Please get out and enjoy this weather. It's already nearly 7 and it's still beautiful out here. So.
It sure is. All right, y'all. Till next time.
Wow, isn't this program amazing? I hope that this has inspired you as much as it has me. And I really think that the thing that impressed me, or just really not even impressed, it all impresses me. The thing that I really was able to take from it is having conversations, talking to people, seeing what the needs are, and finding ways to be able to do something about it. I hope this inspires you to take some initiative of just having those conversations and seeing what you might be able to do. Or even better yet, reach out to Dr. Day and see how you might be able to help or support her in her initiatives. Take care, y'all.